Instead of having a holiday party, we just invited everyone we knew to be on the panel this morning. It's it's very nice. I think it's great. We got quite a group this morning. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this 1st of December. We have hit the last month of this year, and I don't know. I guess it depends on what kind of year you had. I'm looking forward to to be over, and we're on the downslide, aren't we? So that's good. 31 days left. Well, we welcome you. It's Friday morning, and we have a wonderful panel for you. And let me introduce them all. This should only take about 10 or 20 minutes. Here we go. Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, Alan. How are you, sir?
Good morning. I'm in an undisclosed place, and I'll speak very little because I'm in awe of the rest of the panel.
Well, we welcome you.
Don't speak too soon.
Yeah, awe's easy.
I'm sure they will give you lots of reason to speak up. Judith Enk is here, former regional administrator for the Environmental Protection Agency. When it was actually an agency, right?
When there was still an environment in the EPA. Good times.
Good times. And hard to believe that was only a year ago. Well, good morning and good to see you. Aaron Pasidi is here. He is a professor at Siena College, where he is... you're the economics professor.
Yes.
And it's a pleasure to have you with us as always.
Thank you
very much, sir. Well, look what the cat dragged in. We've been waiting for his return for a while, and I know he was out on the road in all kinds of cool places. Every once in a while I would text him and say, hey, are you up for doing the show? And he would, I don't know, where were you, Switzerland? Where were
you? Oh, I was at Poland,
Zurich.
Scandinavia, England.
Yeah.
In
well,
between.
Malcolm Nance is back. Our counterterrorism expert, best-selling author, and MSNBC contributor is with us, and we are thrilled to have him. Equally thrilling to have Rich Honan back on the program, corporate attorney and our good buddy. And Rich, always a pleasure to have you on the program.
Pleasure to be here.
All right. What a group. All
what
right.
What a week.
What a week. I guess it was Morning Joe this morning. I was listening to Morning Joe, and one of the commentators said that this was one of the most frantic weeks in Washington, and somebody, because I was listening to a radio broadcast of a television program, they said. Well, and you can't say that. Every week is a frantic week in Washington these days. So I don't even know when you say what a week of what that means.
More frantic today.
So we are just learning.
More frantic.
Just now.
Wow. The news has just broken that Michael Flynn has been charged with making false statements to the FBI. Has Mueller charged the one charge him?
Yes.
So Michael Flynn charged with making false statements to the FBI, and that has just been released. That is according to CNN, and we'll get more information as soon as
it becomes
available.
I wonder if that means he's not cooperating with Mueller.
Oh, he's really cooperating with Mueller.
But how can he be charged while he's cooperating?
Well, because, you know, and I'd hate to be the one to say this. This is Malcolm. I've made this prediction back last March. On the Joy Reid show, that at some point that statement with Kislyak, and it's rather surprising because he was director of Defense Intelligence Agency. We do a thing called own force monitoring and counterintelligence monitoring.
That means you have to tell the truth.
No, that means that when you talk on the telephone to a foreign ambassador, it is monitored by U.S. intelligence. And somehow he thought he was above that and didn't. And then clearly that he lied to a federal investigator means that he is going to tell us the truth, who actually directed him to say what.
So a couple of things. First of all, in the future, Malcolm, if you're going to make these predictions that are going to change the world, do it on our show.
Okay.
Second of all,
Joe Donahue, Joy Reid, interchangeable. You're both wonderful.
Thank you.
That was a compliment.
So Michael Flynn charged with making false statements to the FBI. Is that a minor charge then?
Yeah, it's a minor charge because what they're doing is that they're getting him to flip on that particular small item. Most likely they have a massive, massive trove of information about his dealings with the Russians, the Turks, at least four major financial situations in which they're going to strip him of his military benefits, of, you know, he's probably going to prison. By admitting this one with Kislyak, I think it's fascinating. It's a pressure point, and it's a pressure point that goes to Mike Pence and Donald Trump. Because either he lied to federal investigators and said, I made that phone call on my own and it was all innocent, when in fact the lie would only have to be somebody above me told me to make that phone call and I'm just following orders. And there's no in between. It's one or the other. So I'm looking at the indictment right now. By admitting to that one count, He certainly gives himself some leverage to say he's cooperating in the probe. And I want to see how Donald Trump... Let's get to Twitter.
Oh, man.
we'll wait for that.
He's admitted to the count?
Yes, he is pled guilty.
He's charged and pled guilty.
Is he charged or is
yes.
he pled to it?
Flynn will plead guilty to making false statements to the FBI. Yeah. By the way, if you're ever in a room with the FBI, and I was told this by a senior FBI agent, and they say, good morning... Go to the window and check, because if you say good morning and it's raining, that's technically a false statement to a federal officer.
Yeah, anything you say to a federal officer gets held against you. No swearing in, no nothing.
Yeah, but if you tell the truth all the time, you have nothing to worry about.
Yeah, and have you never made a mistake over the last however many years?
I've never lied to an FBI agent.
If you talked to one for a couple of hours, you will end up having said something that's not true.
I disagree. I'm calling you if I ever get called.
All right, so Alan, what do you make of this?
Well, it's very interesting in that Malcolm is exactly right. This is the road to getting some cooperation so that a general doesn't have to go to jail. And it just shows that Mueller is on his way and that we're not going to know anything till we know something. I mean, to say anything else would be, silly, right?
Well, it does wonder, you do wonder what the next step is here. Do you think that will be fast?
Well, I think Mueller is a guy who doesn't want to be there for the rest of his life. He's made that quite clear. He's a guy who is, doing what he needs to do in order to get this thing done. And I think as each of these drip, drip, drip things happen, the guy in the White House has got to be pulling his orange hair out.
Remember, months ago, Flynn's lawyer said he wants a deal. He has a lot to offer. And the investigators said, hold up. We need to hear how credible this is. But Flynn's lawyer went out publicly and said, my guy wants to talk.
Yeah, we'll make a deal.
Yeah.
But my question, and I'm just curious, that this is to Judith's point earlier, that if you assume that you're charged and you're pleading, then you've made a deal. And you're going to start working, but then with the next step, doesn't it make sense that the next step of that, whatever information they yielded from that, would be fairly quickly dispensed?
No, they're gonna keep working this for as long as they possibly can, and they're gonna have to examine his statements against whatever else they find. There's no reason for them to do this quickly.
Right. I think that, and I've been neck deep in this for 15 months now. The Mueller investigation is drawing a circle around everyone because, as I like to recall, this was a national counterintelligence investigation. They were looking for Americans who were cooperating with Russian spies. And the first thing they always do in one of these national security investigations is they draw a circle around you, and within that circle starts your finances to determine whether you've accepted money or anything from a foreign government. Then they check, and if they find crimes in the middle of that, like you were, the way they did with the Enron guys, then they can go after those. But they're still going to keep pressuring you and drawing that circle tighter until the information takes them back to this main theme. Did you work with Russian intelligence? Did you work to engineer the election? And, these minor things with Flynn right now, this is minor. Flynn is going to be charged with attempting to abduct a U.S. resident for $15 million. And it's just, I think this is the, this is sort of like playing out to where he's feeling whether Flynn is really cooperating or not, and this shows that he is cooperating.
Well, but Malcolm, here's the thing. Pardon me. If he's pled guilty, that means he has taken the Fed's deal. They've given him this deal, right? So he has pled guilty. They're not going to overcharge him now if he says, okay, in return for this nice thing you've done for me, I'm going to sing. I don't think they're going to overcharge him.
I think that he's cooperating so much on those other issues that this is the one thing that he's going to get nailed for. But as I said earlier, this discussion he had with Kislyak kicks the issue up to either he was ordered by Mike Pence or Donald Trump. And, you know, this could be the entire basis of Trump's obstruction of justice charge why he fired Comey. There's 10 or 15 other major investigative, you know, issues happening within the Flynn, Manafort, Trump, Kushner, Trump Jr. world. We're going to be at this for a couple of years.
Well, let's remember that it was Pence who got Flynn fired, right? Am I wrong
so
about
they
that?
Say,
well, that was the cover story.
That was the story. And if this is true, the only thing that can be true is he was ordered and then lied to the FBI that he made that phone call on his own, five phone calls to the Russians on his own volition.
Because Trump said that about of withholding information from Pence and lying to Pence, but then went on to defend Flynn for quite a while.
And fire Comey.
And fire Comey.
And then tell Kislyak the next day.
And call Congress and tell them to back off of their Russia investigation.
Numerous times.
We'll get to that in a few
Sorry
moments.
Sorry to jump ahead.
That's all right. We just, the official word is here that Mr. Flynn is scheduled to appear in federal court in Washington at 10:30 this morning. So,
I did say what a week.
You were correct. We didn't even know.
I will be fascinated to see
today,
if he wears a uniform when he goes in.
Oh.
Pulling Oliver North.
Well, so we'll obviously have more on that as time goes on here in the next hour and a half, and we'll find out more information. Okay, so let's go to let's go to the other story here, which is the one that Judith just alluded to, which Trump was pressing top Republicans to end the Senate Russia inquiry. We now hear that President Trump over the summer repeatedly urged Senate Republicans, including the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, to end the panel's investigation into Russia's interference in the 2016 election, according to a half dozen lawmakers and aides. Mr. Trump's requests were a highly unusual intervention from a president into a legislative inquiry involving his family and close aides. Senator Richard Burr of North Carolina, the Intelligence Committee chairman, said in an interview this week that Mr. Trump told him that he was eager to see an investigation that has overshadowed much of the first year of his presidency come to an end. It was something along the lines of, "I hope you can conclude this as quickly as possible," Mr. Burr said. He said he replied to Mr. Trump that when we have exhausted everyone we need to talk to, we will finish. In addition, according to lawmakers and aides, Mr. Trump told Senator Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, the Republican leader, as well as Senator Roy Blunt, Republican of Missouri, and a member of the Intelligence Committee, to end the investigation swiftly. Senator Dianne Feinstein, a California Democrat who is a former chairwoman of the Intelligence Committee, said in an interview this week that Mr. Trump's requests were inappropriate and represented a breach of the separation of powers.
You know what's so interesting here is the idea that all along he's been trying to exacerbate any kind of false rumor about Hillary Clinton that he can, and going on and on and on in order to get that investigation going. Why aren't they doing this now? So this is fascinating, because now we find out, in addition to trying to get her into hot water and more trouble and an investigation, he's trying to use his powers to take the spotlight off of himself.
I've said this a dozen times, and at least half a dozen on this program. Trump thinks he's dealing with a junior district attorney of southern Manhattan, and that he can just pressure him and engineer an outcome, and he is stepping into a wood chipper. I mean, this thing is going to eat him. That is straight up obstruction of justice. And every time he asks someone, they become a witness in the Mueller investigation.
There were many discussions that when the first round of Mueller indictments came out, that the reason that they were done the way they were done was to basically see how the president would react, and within that reaction, perhaps see if there was further obstruction.
Yeah.
Now, whether that was true or not, I don't know. That was the insinuation made by many. And so you look at this particular situation with even Michael Flynn, and what impact will that have? How will he react? And that is what's right. So interesting.
And I, you know, in reading the New York Times piece last night, what also struck me is other senators saying that when the president called them, he was very forceful. It wasn't just a, hey, could you find your way to not investigate Flynn. These were forceful suggestions from the president. I think the good news is, as far as we know, Senator Burr and others did not succumb to the pressure. But I think the bigger issue here also, not that I'm at all diminishing how totally inappropriate and possibly illegal it is to call senators and ask them to back off or wrap up investigations, but this is part of a pattern. He fired Comey. He pressured Attorney General Sessions. He's threatening to fire Mueller. Now he's called Republican leaders. Where does this end?
Let's pause there, and we'll discuss that question and many more when we return right after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Judith Eng, Aaron Pasitti, Malcolm Nance, and Rich Honan. And we welcome your letters. We would love your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. And we'd love to hear what you have to say about what we're talking about this morning. So far, we've been talking about the latest, which is that Michael Flynn has been charged with lying to the FBI. He will be appearing in court at 10:30 this morning, charged with making false statements to the FBI. This part of the Mueller investigation. And we've also been discussing the fact that the president, according to a New York Times report, has been putting pressure on Republican leaders in the Senate and House as to either speed up or to do away with the Russia investigation. Rich, what do you make of all this?
Well, I think I've had that conversation 1,000 times with involving investigations. Either do what either do it and indict, or give it up. Yeah, I think that's a conversation that I don't think it's anything near obstruction of justice. I think it's a very common conversation. You say, look, I'm not telling you which way to go, but I would like you to do it quickly.
See, but I don't think Trump understands what obstruction of justice is. He's a businessman who's used to a hierarchy, and you tell your underlings what to do, and he has no understanding about the separation of powers.
He's used to influencing lawyers, too.
Right. I mean, that's what business people do, is they DAs. Influence, they put pressure on them, and they try to extract whatever it is they're after. But, running a government and a country is very different than running a business, and I think I would hope he sees that, but it's very clear he still doesn't see this.
He's going to see it when it's all said and done.
He's allowed to ask. He's allowed to say, look, I'm not telling you what to do, but,
No, but he's not allowed
to. No, you're not.
He's a national investigator.
You can't meddle in a
national
investigation. That is obstruction of a federal investigation.
It's almost the equivalent of calling a jury member in the middle of
a
trial.
No, it's the equivalent of calling the district attorney or the U.S. attorney and say, how long are you going to keep investigating my guy?
I don't think it's how long.
Let me just read a paragraph from the Times story. Mitch McConnell, who over the summer was quickly notified of Mr. Trump's calls to his Senate colleagues, told multiple associates that Mr. Trump appeared unable to distinguish traditional policy concerns about Russia from more specific questions about Russian interference in the presidential race. The Senate leader told associates that Mr. Trump did not seem to recognize that the Republican Party traditionally took a suspicious view of Russia, or that lawmakers could favor punishing Russia without questioning Mr. Trump's victory in 2016.
Well, I probably agree with that, but that's a separate point from what we're talking about.
Is it?
But Rich, if you had a client under congressional investigation, would you advise your client not to call the congressional investigators?
It's simple. Donald Trump,
it's just timing.
Even though it has not been said, all of the implications of where this investigation is started, considering it's his campaign, could eventually end up being a target of this investigation. This, again, is a national counterintelligence investigation. Another word for it is spy hunt. And we are looking for Americans, and that's where it started, who were coordinating and cooperating with known Russian intelligence officers. That information's out there. We got those FISAs in June of 2016. Those guys just don't know what Mueller knows, and they're trying to engineer an outcome. And by Donald Trump trying to put his thumb on the scale in this thing, he is further adding to obstruction of justice. His firing of Comey, he admitted it to Matt Lauer and the Russians, and then later to the American public.
Lester Holt, that
is why he tried to stop this investigation. This thing is going to consume him. He does not understand that the Constitution put these checks and balances in there to stop people from acting like George III.
It's one thing for Trump to say to Congress, like, speed up tax reform, or let's put an end to tax reform and move on. But it's another thing to tell the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee to stop investigating this.
No, he didn't say stop investigating.
Yes, he said the first paragraph.
He said, you know, move it along. End it. Finish it.
Yeah, end it.
Well, no,
you can't do that.
End. Stop.
Finish up your investigation. Stop dragging it out.
But Rich, as an attorney, wouldn't you advise your client?
You always tell your client, "Let me do the talking." But there's a lot of times when you're talking to clients, and they say, "You know, I want to talk to the other side," and you say, "All right, go ahead."
That's why the hardest job in Albany is Don McCann's job, being the White House counsel.
Listen, Rich, when I have my impeachment pizza party, you are invited to a special seat that I will sit in the middle of my living room.
I hope I get to see you socially before that, because that's not going to happen. Okay.
And from an undisclosed place, I have to say, as much as it pains me to do so, I think Rich has a point. I do think that you're all right, that it's the job of the lawyer to do that, that it really is. But the question is, does it rise to criminality or impeachability? And I don't know that that's enough.
Yeah, the other thing that everybody is skipping here is you guys are all treating it like he's a known target of an investigation. If it was Flynn, if it was Manafort, if it was somebody if it was his son-in-law, I would probably be a little more forceful, because happens all the time, by the way. People say, listen, if I could just talk to the FBI, if I could just talk to the IRS and explain it, if I could just talk to the SEC or, you know, whoever, you know. And you're right, Aaron, to an extent, these are people that are used to, you know, using the force of their personality and trying to affect events. And as a lawyer, as any kind of advisor, you have to, you know, work on that, right?
You know what? It's almost as
But he's not a known target.
But you're right.
He's not a known target.
He is just the person who this entire pyramid of conspiracy is pointing towards and that benefited him. And that, look, the first guy Mueller hired when he read Comey's dossier was the guy who took down Enron, then went to New York City mafia money laundering. Why did he pick up that phone that afternoon?
This was
the false
dossier that was paid for by the Democratic National.
No, I'm talking about Comey's actual classified report that he turned over to Mueller to pick up the investigation. Mueller read that thing, and by 3 p.m. that afternoon, he's hiring the top money laundering and mafia crimes guy in America, and followed up with 16 more money laundering guys. That's what's in the Comey document related to the Trump campaign.
Follow the money.
You've been shot out of a cannon. you're all riled up this morning.
I came here to sit and talk about tax reform and drink your coffee. Yeah. And now I get Flynn. I've already got to go on Chris Hayes tonight. I mean, this is an action-filled day.
Excellent. Well, glad you got work. That's good.
Usually it happens at 5:30. I don't know why we're here so early. Breaking news.
Let's talk about the tax plan, and we'll start this. Well, then we're going to have to take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll continue talking about it. The snag, of course, being that there are some deficit concerns. The Senate Republican tax bill, which had appeared to be cruising to victory, suffered a setback late Thursday, as lawmakers were forced to contemplate significant changes, including future tax increases, to help pay for the legislation. The bill had gained momentum in the morning when it picked up a key swing vote, but it came to a grinding, if only temporary, halt as lawmakers scrambled in the early evening to find ways to raise several hundred billion dollars after some members objected to moving forward without a plan to safeguard against ballooning the deficit. I guess the question I have for you, Aaron Pasitti, our resident economist, is how were they moving forward for so long and suddenly, oh, really? This is $1 trillion? Oh, we had no idea.
Because they weren't serious about it. You know, tax reform, like any legislation, is incredibly complicated, and you change, you know, one of the 100 parameters, and that leads to 100 unintended consequences of this. And now that the Joint Committee on Taxation scoring report came out earlier this week, all of a sudden people are paying attention, and they're like, oh, this actually is going to add to the deficit. The big reason that Congress was ignoring the deficit implications was that Steve Mnuchin, Secretary of Treasury, was straight up lying by saying, listen, the Treasury Department ran all these numbers, and this tax plan is going to pay for itself, and it's not going to add to the deficit. And I think it came out earlier this week that Treasury employees said, oh, no, he never told us to investigate that. So not only was there no report, Mnuchin was lying about the existence of a report. So senators were just either willfully ignorant of, you know, okay, Mnuchin's lying, or they actually believed him. Every serious economist at this point, now that the scoring's out, is saying the Treasury Department and Congress are just making stuff up at this point. And now that it's out, it's going to add 10% to the deficit over the next decade. And there's going to be no positive effects of growth for this. There's going to be huge handouts to the wealthy. And in the next, after the first 5 years, there's going to be huge tax increases on 50% of all of the households.
Yes, but see, here's my view of this, Aaron. I've felt from the very beginning this whole thing is one big shell game. And if you're reading the papers, Joe read us last night's papers. This morning, guys like Ron Johnson from Wisconsin, they're all signing on. Mm-hmm. Everybody's signing on now. So I think, oh, yes, we gave him a little something. We gave Susan Collins a little something.
Drilling in the Arctic.
In terms of deductibility, we gave this and that. No, I think this is a preordained game. It's a shell game, and I think we're going to have a tax bill whether we like it or not, and nothing's going
to
stop.
But Corker and Flaker still opposed to it because of the deficit, and they're not running for re-election, so they have very little to lose by opposing it, and that would essentially submarine the plan.
Well, yes and no. Well, these guys have political ambitions, even though they're not running for office. They may want political influence. They may want to lobby. Who knows? They all do. Afterwards. Sorry. Go ahead.
But rushing a vote on it today, a couple days after the Joint Committee on Taxation scoring report comes out, is just bad politics. And it just exposes the whole fact that this is just a giant reshuffling of $1.5 trillion, and who gets it? And it's primarily millionaires, multimillionaires, and billionaires.
Hey, don't think I don't agree with every word you're saying.
Well,
I do.
Well, and everybody else who itemizes their deductions, which is going to go from 70% of the country to 94%.
Right.
That's a pretty big swath of the country.
Yes. So I agree. I hate this. But I'm telling you, as an observer of the situation, I think the Mickey is in. I think it's done.
Well, Alan, it's Judith. I think you're probably right, but I just want to point out at 9:46 on Friday morning, the Senate is slated to vote this afternoon or this evening. No one has read the bill. There's not been one public hearing on the bill. And I think the Republicans are making a mistake in that. This may have to go to a conference committee, which will be interesting. If it gets too dicey, the House may just pass whatever the Senate passes.
Yes, they will.
And Trump will pressure them to get this done in December. But I think what the Republicans are underestimating is the fact that after this becomes law, people will actually get to read it. And they will see so many provisions that are bad for the middle class, certainly bad for low-income people. And my prediction is that a terrible tax bill that shifts massive amounts of money to the rich and corporations will pass at some point in this Congress, and consequently the Democrats will prevail in the midterm elections. This is going to really be a wake-up call.
And the convenient thing about the so they'll initially, over the first 5 years, there'll be tax cuts for most families, the amount of which varies. But the convenient part about that is a lot of those tax increases that are designed to help, you know, pay off to mitigate the effect on the deficit come 5 years from now, hopefully a year after Trump leaves office.
So wait. Do all of you agree? I just want to poll the panel. Do all of you agree this thing is going to pass?
Good chance.
I'd say a little less than a good chance.
You know, the other thing
kind
in
of
here,
vague.
The other thing in here
49% chance, Alan.
said the numbers guy. Susan Collins is also still this.
She said she's going to vote for this, but people are trying to educate her on what a severe mistake
she said she was open to considering, and
she said that she's insisting on several changes, including a plan to allow Americans to deduct $10,000 in property taxes and an expansion of the child tax credit. And she said that she currently believes her proposed are not being taken seriously, which could throw her support in jeopardy.
Right. But even so, that's encouraging. But I mean, I'm not going to rely on Corker and Flake to save the day. It's just too hard a bet. But even if it doesn't pass today, which I think would be good and would provide some sunlight, and you see there's like major environmental problems in this bill, there's Puerto Rico problems in this bill, we'll eventually understand it all. They're going to just keep coming back because this is to keep their donors and large companies happy. If it doesn't pass today, it'll pass sometime in December.
Judith, can you name a major bill that anyone has read before voting on in
sure.
that
healthcare.
The healthcare bill was on the floor for 25 days.
This bill's not even actually physically drafted.
It is not actually drafted.
This is highly unusual. No, it's not.
Nobody reads these bills.
Well,
nobody
staff read the bills. Analysts read the bills. Staff have not had a chance to read the whole bill. They know the contours. This is the most consequential economic bill of our lifetime.
Since Obamacare.
And far more than Obamacare. And here, the day of the vote, no one has the full bill to read.
I think that's such a, you hear this all. So in law, whenever somebody tries to fight, well, you know this, whenever somebody tries to say a law is unconstitutional or the fiction that they always rely upon is a law passed by a legislature is Congress or state is presumed to be valid. And I think that presumption was based on the old quaint idea that everybody used to read the bill. Everybody who voted on the bill was supposed to read the bill. I don't think if you did a lie detector test of everybody who voted in favor of, say, Obamacare or this bill, make it Republican or Democrat, I don't care, and said, have you read your way through this bill? The answer is no.
Well, there's a difference, and by the way,
that should be a law. It should be a law that before you vote a bill, you should have to swear that you read the whole damn thing.
And if we were in regular order, quite a bit of that would be done. We would be having hearings. This is going to create a $1.3 trillion hole in the deficit. We're giving away. This is literally.
Over 10 years.
You know what? This is literally.
Over 10 years, Malcolm.
Yeah. This is literally looting the Treasury.
You're right.
Literally looting the Treasury for that will not stimulate economic growth. They've already said they're going to keep their money.
Hold on a second. It'll stimulate economic growth 0.8% over the next
10 years.
That's right. In executive jet purchases.
Yeah, over 10 years.
Yeah, so that's why.
So I'm going to buy stock in Bombardier in Canada.
The real tragedy here is
if they wanted to do a middle-class tax cut, they should have done a middle-class tax cut.
They could have just sent out checks.
Apparently that's what Marco Rubio wants to do with the refundable
get your $80 check like most people in the last year.
Alan, go ahead.
A couple of points. Number one, for those of us who have worked in the legislature, we know full well that you don't have to read every word of a bill to know what the principal points of that bill are. As Judith, I think, just said, that's a staff responsibility. But you read the papers, you know what they are. Somebody's going to come up to you and say, hidden here in paragraph 52 is the real stinker. You'll know that. So I'm not nearly as concerned about the poison pill, Rich, for every person who doesn't read the bill, from beginning to end. These are smart people. They know what's in this legislation. The New York State legislature, now that's a different story.
So here's an example. This is a good point. I of course, they don't read the entire bill. It's gigantic. There's a lot of things on their plate. But when you start looking at the unintended consequences of this, so if you cut corporate taxes, the Trump administration's argument is, well, workers are going to benefit because that's going to give corporations more money to hire more workers and invest.
Which I'm not sure I buy.
Oh, no, I don't buy it either.
Yeah,
no economists buy it.
Yeah,
but so if you look at
the theory.
But if you look at where the gains of corporate tax cuts go, you have Ireland as a case where you cut corporate taxes. Most of the gains of that are going to go to foreign investors, not U.S. workers, and even to a greater extent, U.S. corporations.
Like it's not going. It's not going to U.S. workers. That's for damn sure. And if Rosemary were here, I would have to bring up the moon tide. And you're all going to say, well, what was the moon tide? Well, the moon tide was owned by a guy named Weisman on Fire Island, who owned several blocks of real estate. And it was so big, a yacht, that he couldn't get it inside the boat basin. It had to be outside the boat basin. Don't you see? That's where the money's going.
That's right. Alan,
executive jets.
I have to take exception to this level of arrogance among elected officials that somehow I am just so damn busy that I can't sit down and read the 4,000-page bill that I wrote, presumably, before I impose it upon 320 million people.
Okay. I buy it. You're right. Of course you're right. However, I want to point out, as a political scientist who has been watching this stuff for years and arguing this stuff for years, there's a difference between is and should. Is the way that it really works. You want to know how it works? I'm telling you.
I know how it works. Yeah. And that's why you have people saying things like, if you like your plan, you could keep your plan. Then they read the bill. Oh, you can't keep the plan.
They knew that. Come on, Rich. They knew it from the very beginning, didn't they? I mean, what, do you think these guys are stupid? These congressmen and these senators are stupid?
We're 10 minutes late for a break. So let's go. We'll take a break. We'll be back. We'll talk for 3 minutes, then we'll take another break. All right. We'll be right back. I think the panel was able to work out some of their differences during the break. I like that. Let me go to some letters, and then we're going to have to, because we're so backed up here, we're going to have to take another break in just a minute. So let me get to some letters here. Jim says, a perfect question for this morning's guest roster. Regarding the tax cut bill, has any agency calculated the deficit based upon a potential war with North Korea and the subsequent decline of the economy as opposed to the off-sited projected growth?
Well, I think international financial markets would be cast into turmoil, and how to quantify that, I don't know, but it would be massive.
Let me put it into the warfighter's perspective. Conventional, we only lose 100,000 people dead in the first week from chemical, biological, and high explosive being thrown around that peninsula. Nuclear, let's say North Korea decides to punish Japan and nuke Tokyo, or Beijing, entire global trade collapses. Every Walmart in America empties in 72 hours. We're done. So I don't know. 5, 10, 100 trillion? Who knows? The sky's the limit.
Underwriting support for Malcolm Nance's Happy Time comes from... No. This letter from Chris says, what no one on your panel has talked about is when Mueller gets too close to bringing charges against Trump, Trump will fire him. Sure, everyone will tell Trump he can't, but don't forget that Trump historically doesn't listen to anybody or anyone. He will fire Mueller, and then what?
Okay, my answer to that, because I'm the guy who has said again and again and again, he's going to fire Mueller. He has to fire Mueller. If Mueller gets too close, he will fire him. No question about it, because there's no alternative for him.
Well, we'll have a preview next week. DOJ, Department of Justice, is going to announce Mueller's budget. And Republicans will go nuts. Whatever the number is, they're going to say it's too much.
Well, yeah, not as much as $1.5 trillion they're about to add to the, you know, to the national debt.
You know, Trump has really lived by the Watergate playbook. It's like he's reading this, you know, the history of him going, I've got to do this next. You know, exactly what, you know, he's going to do a Saturday Night Massacre. Let it be done so we can get on with what is, you know, a slow burn impeachment.
Reading? Okay, then Patty says, I have the day off and I have called 47 of our GOP senators this morning asking that they vote no on this tax bill. I'll finish calling during the roundtable break.
And call,
right. Definitely call your own.
Call Nana and Grandma in Florida and Grandpa, wherever they are, and get them to call.
Yes.
They want to hear
Pass
from you
on.
Anyway.
Joe says, do you all remember Mike Flynn righteously leading the chants of lock her up at the convention? Yeah. I say lock him up. You know, all right, Joe.
You know, some of my followers on Twitter are very funny, and they're now throwing these memes out left and right with MAGA. Many are getting arrested. Again. And another one is Mueller ain't going away.
Forget Make America Great Again. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We have many other topics to discuss. Ray Graff has news. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. What a panel we have for you. Alan Chartok is here. Judith Enk is with us. Aaron Pasitti, Malcolm Nance, Rich Honan, and we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We do have letters. We have this one from Brucey, who says there will be no impeachment until Ryan decides Trump is no longer useful or until Trump is clearly damaging the GOP.
Or until the midterm elections and the Democrats control the House.
As far as Bobby in High Falls says, Trump's handling of both the investigation and the tax bill seemed to mimic his corporate behavior in history. He's putting pressure on those he sees as competitors in the former case, and he's not worried about bankruptcy in the latter. Increase the debt? No problem. We'll just declare another bankruptcy. It has nothing to do with the government, of which he understands nothing. It's all about him, as usual. It's the only way he knows how to operate. David says, as to the Trump tax plan, could be that Trump knows he's a one-term president, is just laying groundwork for himself and his rich friends, making his life that much better once he becomes a private citizen again. Why are your eyes closed, Rich? Okay.
Keep going.
All right. Maureen says, why are we raising the deficit at all? Here's my plan. That trillion-plus money could be used to build infrastructure that would create jobs and a better business environment. Cut the corporate tax, close their loopholes, and leave the rest of it alone. If any breaks be given, let it be to small businesses. John says, to your discussion, this is what we get when we elect people that hate government. Mr. Trump proves daily that he is utterly unqualified for the position he holds. Please, please help us start a discussion about how we find people of integrity and high character to run for office. The Democrats must start now to bring forward a candidate that can win the next election.
Simple. Don't elect stupid people. Right? I mean, we used to revere people of intellect and intelligence and dispassion, and now that's an operative.
Yeah, we say that, except that with the exception of Lincoln, our greatest presidents have rarely been the smartest people in their cabinets.
Obama?
He was smart.
You pretty dang smart.
Still is.
Part, I want to be that smart.
You missed the part where I said our greatest presidents.
Said Lincoln, I throw in Obama.
Now you're just baiting us.
No, look at George Washington, look at Harry Truman.
Smart.
Smart, but was George Washington the smartest guy in his cabinet? Was he smarter than Hamilton and Thomas Jefferson?
I didn't say the smartest. I just said smart.
That's my point.
Educated. These are men of the Enlightenment. They were brilliant compared to the people we have today.
And by the way, I have a candidate.
I agree with that.
I have a candidate, and I've been interviewing him regularly on the air. I
Cory
think he's a
Booker?
Man great.
I'm not available.
No,
me?
A great integrity.
I vote for Aaron.
And that's Chris.
Oh,
and that's Chris Murphy. I mean, this guy is so smart. He is a model of rectitude, really is not afraid to say what needs to be said. I think he's terrific.
I don't know who Chris Murphy is.
Connecticut.
He's well, Chris. Go to the congressional corner. And listen to our interviews with him. He's unbelievable.
I've been on with Chris a few times. My problem is, and unfortunately it's just the environment we live in, these guys need to learn how to sling mud, all right? And when somebody comes out and calls you, you know, Crazy Chris or something like that, you need to respond right then and there forcefully, aggressively, directly, and then shame them that we shouldn't be teaching our kids to talk like that.
Yeah, just like the swift boat.
Right. Which, as you know, no longer means high-speed riverine craft, right?
Mike says, good morning. Arguing with Mr. Honan is emblematic of the entire Trump nation. If you bring up salient arguments against Trump, they say, what about Hillary? What about the Democrats? For example, the allegations against Al Franken are not the same as those against Roy Moore. Just be honest, Mr. Honan, two wrongs don't make a right, and two wrongs don't have to be equivalent.
Listen, anybody has a right to... This infuriates me. I'll be honest with you. It is so important to have Rich Honan on our panel.
Yep.
It is. Do we really want to have a panel which is an echo chamber, or do we want Rich, and I'd like to have him on every day, to be honest with you, to be there presenting the other side? I don't agree with a word he says. Nevertheless, I think Trump is the president. Trump is the president of the United States.
A ringing endorsement.
Trump is the president of the United States. Rich, for God's sakes.
Rich, would you like to respond?
I agree with the two wrongs do not make a right. I'm with you on that.
But, you know, it's really enjoyable to actually have a civilized disagreement with somebody who's educated from the opposite side, because it allows you to reevaluate your own position.
And as soon as we find such a person, we'll
oh, how humble.
We'll put him on.
So humble.
Yeah, by the way, I hope that none of this... you know I don't like this tax plan, right?
Well, I know. That's what I was going to say.
We're all over the fact that I think the idea of a revenue-neutral tax plan is an oxymoron. Either cut taxes and live with the consequences, or don't cut taxes. And trying to do both is going to get you neither.
Mike says, for the people on the panel against Trump's tax plan, how do you think what we have now is better? Wages have been flat in Massachusetts for a decade. Our corporate taxes are among the highest in the world. And the wealthy gap has grown tremendously over the last 8 years.
Quick, I'm stepping in on this one. All right. I'm coming from the intelligence community. For God's sakes, okay? These things are empirical. You just can't come out and throw out these phrases. Our corporate taxes are not the highest in the world. All right? I just came from Sweden, pretty dang high.
The sticker price, the 35%.
Right.
Is the highest tax rate in the developed world. Yeah. But when you actually look at the effective tax rate after deductions and loopholes and transfer pricing and offshore, it's actually one of the lowest.
I'm surprised.
And the second thing is that taxes has very little to do with rising inequality. That has to do with a whole other set of policies.
Yeah. I get the fact that the GE is not supposed to have paid any taxes. That's okay, I guess. The main thing question for me is, at what point do we start paying them?
Yeah,
I'm paying them.
I also want to add, there's a lot in this tax bill that is not directly on point on taxes. There are huge healthcare implications, education implications.
Oh, yeah.
There's this political lobbying for churches. This changes the law that was in place since 1954. That concerns
me. It's a cultural war
greatly.
Document.
Drilling for oil and gas in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. There's a lot here.
But hasn't that become the model for... that one of the big problems, besides the 4,000 pages, which nobody reads? There's stuff in page 3,049. There's something that has nothing to do with taxes or nothing to do with health care, nothing to do
agree.
With hurricane
but
relief.
But again,
or
this is a cultural war document. This tax plan looks so much like the state of Kansas. And what they did, which
was
devastated.
Which didn't work.
Yeah.
Devastated. That state was AAA rated and now is junk. And their own full Republican legislature had to massively raise taxes. It destroyed their state education system.
Yeah, but not doing anything.
Now we're going to do it on a national scale.
Yeah, but not doing anything. Then you have a state that looks like Illinois, where they can't pay their can't pay their own benefit payments and haven't been able to pay their
municipal workers.
So
the option is refinish the house or set it on fire.
The option is the option.
Okay, I'm with refinishing.
The option is there's always going to be people who say our taxes should be lower, and some people say no. The question is, can the government do better with the money? Can the people? That's what makes us conservatives versus liberals.
I agree.
That's philosophical.
But we should all agree you shouldn't loot the Treasury because you have the chance.
I agree with that.
Okay.
Except a trillion and a half over 10 years versus a trillion a half a year.
So you're only looting it a little every year.
I've also said before that there's a different when you're spending money on war and entitlements. That's one thing. When you're spending money on, I'll use your phrase, if you're looting the Treasury to lower taxes, at least you have an economic theory, with which not everybody agrees, at least you have an economic theory that says in some way that could be accretive to value.
My problem with the plan is
I'd say that too.
Listen, I'm losing more I'm losing more money over this tax plan if it goes through than
it really
than
benefits
anybody.
The super rich, the donor class, large corporations. Right. This is not good for middle America.
What? And it's not just middle America, it's, you know, like probably 90% of America. Like, it's not.
Yeah.
You know what the problem with that moon tide analogy is, Alan, is that he tried to bring it into a U.S. port. Most people take it straight to Monaco and park it there.
And have it flagged under Panama.
Correct.
I just don't understand. If you're going to lower taxes, why don't you say, we're going to lower taxes 2%, or we're going to lower taxes, you know, 0.5% at the higher level and 1.5% at the you know, and lower taxes and say, yes, it's going to explode the deficit or it's going to increase the deficit. We have a theory that maybe it won't do that as badly.
Are you sure you're conservative? That common sense is not allowed here.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I totally agree with Rich. If you're going to have a tax cut, have a tax cut.
Right.
Structure it in a way that is reasonably equitable. I know there are a lot of special interests that try to, you know, extract, you know, benefits for themselves. That's fine. That's always happened. It's making it so that it's actually
terrible.
A tax cut and so that honest economists can say this will have some positive effect on the economy.
And I agree 100%. You must be read.
Before. You know, I keep thinking,
my tax cut is a page long, right? You know, if you make people read the bills, they don't write a 4,000-page bill.
I notice you're not in Washington.
But
to go to Malcolm's point about looting the Treasury, that's fine. Loot the Treasury, but loot the Treasury for something like an infrastructure project or, I don't know, so something that would be broadly beneficial like
education.
Education or government guaranteed employment.
Single payer healthcare.
So looting the Treasury is perfectly fine, provided that there is some positive economic impact that allows you to pay back what you looted.
Exactly.
And with this tax plan, like Rich pointed out, that's not going to happen. This is just reshuffling the deck.
I don't see that path. So where are the are the Republicans in the United States Senate right now? But I'll tell you where they are. They're between a rock and a hard place. They know what you're saying. The problem with them is they don't dare. First of all, they're greedy for the people who give them the money. We know that.
Chris Collins said this is to make the donors happy.
We know that. But secondly, they hate Trump's guts. And that has been said over and over again by insiders, people who are leaving the Senate. But they don't want to lose in a primary, so they do what they're told.
Yeah. The Bannon effect. I think since Bannon left the White House, he's really got the many Republicans worried about primaries.
Absolutely. They should be. Even for people on the conservative side, if you're going to come out and say I'm going to vote, you know, against Obamacare or something, whether you agree or disagree, do it. But then when the time comes and you don't do it, you should be voted out.
I have a few more letters. Let's go to Denise in Loudonville, who says a really great panel today. Imagine this. Trump fires Mueller. Investigation ends. Mueller or his staff leaks all evidence to the failing New York Times. End of presidency?
Come on.
Is there anything left they haven't leaked? I mean, really? Is there anything left they have not leaked?
Mueller does not leak. When Mueller comes out with news, often we are surprised.
No, the only time we were ever surprised, Judith. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
The only time we were ever surprised was the one time that Mueller did not want something to get out, and that was when they did the deal with, Papadopoulos. Yeah, that was the only thing that came as a surprise in this entire investigation, and was the only thing that Mueller did not want leaked.
No, Mueller hasn't leaked at all. I mean, very early on, people were saying when those indictments were announced, and I was down in 30 Rock when it was announced, that this is really early and these must be really low-hanging guys. Mm-hmm. And then we woke up to Manafort and Gates, and then we found that Papadopoulos was essentially pleading guilty to conspiring against the United States government. This is really big stuff. And none of that stuff came out. It's a surprise to everybody, even this Flynn.
They were talking about the indictments for 2 weeks before that.
Oh, look, they start talking about the indictments.
But they didn't talk about Papadopoulos.
If he's the bottom of the totem pole, you've still got everybody between Michael Flynn and Papadopoulos who could be indicted.
I just want to say I like saying Papadopoulos.
Oh, right. Absolutely.
I think it's the best criminal name, and I want to know who's going to play him in the movie.
Well. He was the, there was a Papadopoulos who was the, at least one who was the Prime Minister of Greece.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Nicholas, I think he was also the father on ALF.
That's what I'm trying to, there was a Papadopoulos, and, yeah. in there was right. somebody from some TV
it's
show.
Smith.
ALF. Was
it's
it ALF?
Smith.
And Murray's other name is George Papadopoulos.
When I was in the military, we had a guy who had a long Greek name, and we couldn't remember it, so we called him Snapcrackopoulos.
Nice.
Oh, boy. That's Malcolm Nance.
That was Let's Malcolm. That was not Rich Honan.
Pat writes and says, I heard on Marketplace last week that in the Senate version of the tax bill, that goods manufactured in Puerto Rico would have an export tax put on them if they were going to the mainland. Is this legal?
Well, it's in the bill. Thank you for raising it, Pat. I mean, Puerto Rico is so struggling with the hurricane, and for some reason in the tax code, it's viewed as a foreign country,
right.
even though it's an American territory. So many elected officials in Puerto Rico said this will be worse than the hurricane. There are so few manufacturing jobs in Puerto Rico. And what I've been trying to find out without success, and Aaron, maybe you know this, so if it's a 20% excise tax on goods made in Puerto Rico and sent to the mainland United States, does that mean every foreign-made product will have a 20% excise tax? I think so.
I thought it was specific to the region. Actually.
I was going
to
say, without reading the bill, I don't know.
Yeah, see, we can't read the bill.
Meaning we're qualified to vote on it in the United States Senate.
Right. But if that is true, and we won't know till we get to read the bill,
that's
20% excise tax on everything foreign made is kind of interesting.
But what was the what was the policy reason for including Puerto Rico? Or is that an oversight, or what is that?
It's existed for decades, and it's considered a foreign nation, and it's nuts.
Way to get money out of them. I have a local, can I pull this down to a local level? How did Faso, what's his position here on the tax bill?
He voted no.
He's voting no?
No.
In the House version.
When he came up in the House, he voted no. And there was a big margin. I think a lot of Republicans were liberated to vote no. We don't know how they'll vote.
Well, also,
the
state and local taxes made it really tough for
a lot of
New York.
That's insane. That will gut the U.S. housing
market.
But New York
Republicans voted yes.
Yes,
Katko
that's right.
Katko in Syracuse, so Stephanie Miner, the incumbent
I guess no
mayor.
One owns a home over there?
I think they were not thinking of their political future. If you're a New York Republican and you vote for this, bye-bye.
Yeah. Well, Peter King's been leading the charge against it, right?
But we don't know how Congressmember Faso will vote on the next round.
Every once in a while, I come back and check up on my representatives by coming on this show.
They'll let him off the hook. That's my bet. They'll count up every vote they need.
If they have the buffer, yeah.
They'll count every vote they need. As soon as they have enough votes, they'll say to all the people who are in danger of losing, you're off the hook. Right. Everybody else, you're in the tank.
All right, 2 minutes. Rex Tillerson.
Rexit.
Who?
Rexit. I didn't make that up.
From the day he uttered the famous words, moron, or something moron.
Effing moron.
Effing moron. Yeah. He was done. Cooked. Put his fork in him. He's over. Yeah. No, with a narcissist like this president, he's not letting that go.
Well, everybody said he wouldn't make it till Christmas.
Well, I don't think he's going to make it to the end of the day.
They're
on schedule to have lunch today at noon, and I think Tillerson is dead man walking.
That was a surprising story because, name dropping. 2 nights ago, I was at the International Spy Museum Gala. For Judge William Webster.
And I was home eating frozen pizza two nights ago.
And we had 6 ex-directors of the CIA there, and Pompeo spoke. And Pompeo said, as a joke, my goal in life is not to be an ex-director at next year's gala. And he was quite sincere. We met him and talked to him. I talked to him and Director Coates. If that decision is coming out, he wasn't informed of it.
Well, he's been under a rock then. Everyone knows that Tillerson is
But Pompeo
out.
To replace him
maybe it won't be Pompeo, but, Trump wants a loyalist in there.
Yeah.
And a hawk. I never thought in my entire life I would say something positive about the CEO of ExxonMobil being the Secretary of State. But Tillerson has been more of a moderating force on North Korea, on the Middle East, and you get Pompeo in there, he's going to be a Trump yes man, and I think it makes the world much less stable.
Especially,
I think Tillerson's surprised to find out that he still works for the State Department.
What's even worse is putting cotton in it, CIA. Ooh. Good God. You want to start with number one.
Run for
the
hills.
Workforce just will not cooperate with him. Good. Done. This Why guy not? Is beyond a hard. Because you know what? They've suffered enough. And the main force, you know, the director of the CIA doesn't actually run the CIA. It's the deputy directors and the careerist. And they can just not brief up.
Cotton, you know, but right. Cotton is 40 years old, and he is a strong supporter of waterboarding.
And war.
All right. We're out of time. My thanks to our wonder group here. Rich Honan, Malcolm Nance, Aaron Pasitti, Judith Enk, Alan, be well where you are. Thank you very much. Have a lovely weekend, and we'll continue with the program after this short break.